I would like to congratulate you on the special contribution that was taken up last Sunday. You again responded to the request of the elders, and almost the entire amount of $2,500 was contributed, and that's going to go for a real good work. Also, the May campaigns are still open. The posters are here on the building, on the walls in front of you. Please examine your heart and your schedule again. If there's any way on earth for you to possibly help us, do that. There's still room for some more. We probably need another 50. I'm not sure the exact number, but we need some more helpers. Please go with us if you can. It's going to be a good year. May God bless us now as we study together. During these last 3 weeks in our study on the eldership, I'm confident that I've never seen such a corporate functioning of minds upon one subject as I have witnessed during these last 3 weeks. Five of those meeting hours I took to open up for you the requirements, the qualifications, and the job description of being elders. And then last Sunday night, our elders had four of their number stand and bring to you some practical applications, some commitments from themselves, and a challenge to those of us of this congregation as we go about this task. And I thought they did a superb job of bringing us this encouragement and this instruction. And I had fully intended that that would be our last Sunday on it, but I haven't been able to get my mind on anything else this past week. I've kept thinking and trying to decide where is the best place to hit. I think now's the time to hit. While we're keen on it, I feel like that we must spend one more Sunday, this morning and tonight, on some practical applications, ways to implement what we've learned over the last 3 weeks. Not only has there been a great focusing of our attention on it, but the subject itself is so universally appropriate. All over the Brotherhood at this time, people are calling attention to the demand for leadership. It's a crucial issue. It's a very relevant theme. And consequently, I beg your patience as we study again, but I think you're as keenly interested in it as I am and as our elders are. So since this is true, I'm asking that we spend one more day on it today for some practical suggestions on how to implement it. Now, there are two reasons why I want to do this. Number one, those of you who are resident members, we need this handle, if we can find it. We need a handle on it at this particular hour because of the particular need and that we're in at this present hour. But secondly, those of you who are students, I must get a lesson across to you in addition to those that we've already gotten across. We must not let you go out of here without having a handle on it for your own life. Young people, you're going to be the elders in the church in the coming years. You're not now, I know, but you are going to be. And you girls are going to be the wives of men who are elders. So let's today again do some creative thinking, do some initiative thinking, and do some creative listening as we see if we can't lay open again in a practical way and make some practical applications of this very important subject. In most large congregations in America and throughout the world, wherever they exist, the work of shepherding is almost totally an impossible job. And I say that without really fear of being contradicted. I think this is true for two reasons. Number one, we haven't really understood clearly and on a very widespread basis the real work of eldering or shepherding. We've just not understood it. We've worked out of a different context, but it has not been a biblical context. We've worked on a limited, more narrow concept that just simply does not meet the divine requirement to fit the job description of shepherding. But then secondly, once a congregation and once an eldership is informed, something else is making the work almost impossible. Plus, it adds to the elders and to the congregation a sense of guilt and frustration because of the simple fact that the work load or the scope of the work is so far beyond human reach that it limits us and frustrates us to the point that we find men just throwing up their hands and saying, well, if that's what eldering is, we haven't got a show. We haven't got a chance. And so, because we've not understood the work of eldering, and secondly, because the scope of the job is so tremendous, the number of people over which elders are supposedly supposed to function in our present arrangement, it just makes it almost an impossible task. I'm going to suggest three things that I am confident must be done if we're going to implement any meaningful expansion of the care that shepherding is to give the church, not just here, but all over the United States. If the work of elders is to be brought into a workable context, three things must take place. Number one, there must be a reduction of the scope of the task. There's just no doubt about it. The ratio between shepherd and sheep has got to be reduced. We just simply are not, we don't have the workforce to do the job. Secondly, there must be a recognition of specialized talents that exist among the eldership. And thirdly, there must be a recruitment of Timothys. We'll notice that one tonight, and it's a very, very important one. I urge you not to miss it. If you'll come, if you'll listen attentively and this morning and do some creative thinking on these first two points, then we'll notice the third one tonight. I believe these three things must take place if we ever get a handle on the work that God wants done among His people. There must be a reduction of the scope of the task, a recognition of the talents, the specialized talents of the elders, and there must be a recruitment of Timothys as we secure subsequent leadership. Let me show you what I mean now. By the reduction of the task, I mean simply this. The elders of this congregation, and I'm going to use us as an example here, we have some 3,000 members in this church. The responsibility or the task in our case is the feeding, the caring, the counseling, the looking after, the picking up of pieces, the searching for those that are wandering and straying away, those who are discouraged and despondent. It's all of this. This is the shepherding, the caring for the flock. But of this number, some 1,500 are students. There are 1,500 students, approximately, and that's a conservative estimate, of who are students, who are members of this church. Well, that leaves 1,500 also who are resident families. But we've got 1,500 who are students. About 4 years ago, the elders made a significant step forward as they secured the services of Terry Smith to come and assist them in shepherding the flock among us that are the young ones, the little lambs, you might call them. And that was a significant step. Consequently, Terry has a committee of men, a committee of some elders, Brother Joe Pryor being the one who is the chairman of his committee. And these elders are giving beautiful attention to the work that's being done through Terry on the campus. And it's their work, and they're seeing to it that those who are members here are getting some kind of feeding through this channel. But even this task that Terry has to do, he can't do it even with his helpers here. Tonight we're going to mention something else, a principle that will help him accomplish that work. But just for the sake of letting you know where we are at this present hour and what's being done, I wanted to mention that 1,500 of us are here as students. The other 1,500, though, that is left, we find that it's necessary to shepherd and care for and feed those people. And these 15 men or so, and I've listed them as 15, we actually have 17 elders. Two of our dear elders, by age and infirmity, are not able to function like they were when they were younger. And they're limited in their getting about. They can't get about at night. They do beautiful teaching. There are other things that they can do, but as practically speaking, they're eliminated from the tasks of going out and looking for sheep and caring for them in that very important way. Well, what do we have then? The 1,500 people that are left can be viewed like this. This is the half of the circle that I mentioned a moment ago. This means that out of the 1,500 people, we still only have 15 elders shepherding that group of people too, in addition to the other responsibilities that they have among the students. Now that must be taken into consideration because many of these men, in fact most of our elders, are college related. That means that these men have given their lives, and they've given them without reservation to seeing to the maturing and the bringing up of these young people into Christian maturity. That takes time. There are only so many hours in the day, and these men, since that is their work, and since they're doing a double work in almost as being teachers and the faculty and administration on campus and being elders here overseeing these young people, there only leaves just a certain amount of time in the week for other things. Consequently, we have this body of people here, the 1,500 of us who are left, being shepherded by men whose life's work really involves them almost totally in the other 1,500. I think you see what I'm talking about there. All right, we've got then a task that's too large for these men if the job of shepherding that we've noticed is scriptural. If that job is going to be done, we've got a task on our hands that's too great for us. And we find then a tendency to want to just withdraw because you can't do it all. We just maybe try not to do any of it in a direct way. Now, the elders are working on this. There are some options that we might just mention that we've already mentioned, and this really isn't the theme of the morning lesson. But there are two or three things we could do to reduce the scope of the task that's resting upon our elders' shoulders. Number one, we can swarm into smaller congregations and appoint elders there to take care of us. But we don't want to do that. We all like to be together. We all want to be here under their oversight. And those who do not perhaps have already gone. But that's one, at least one option. We could swarm, build smaller buildings, go into smaller congregations, and then appoint elders to oversee them. Secondly, we can ignore our enlarged numbers until they become discouraged and gravitate into existing congregations that already have elders. That's another option. And it's probably where there have been many to go. But that's another option. Thirdly, we can appoint more elders in keeping with the membership. The total increase in the membership ought to be matched by a corresponding increase in the eldership. I mean, that's just good figures. But there's another option, and probably between the third and fourth, there's a combination there. The fourth thing is that is keep a reasonable number of elders as we have now, but delegate their responsibilities to others, and then let the elders simply oversee it in an indirect way. Well, while it's possible that elders can delegate some responsibilities to other people, it never does come to the place where the elders can delegate all of their responsibilities to other people. But the elders are working on this. And as one of the elders told me, he said, it's not a matter of whether, it's a matter of how. And what the elders are discussing now is how is the best way to go about to bring to the congregation the kind of care they need, and at the same time provide the unified leadership that this congregation has always been blessed with. How's the best way to go about bringing about the best of both? And so that's what they're working on at this time. Now, the second thought that I need to bring out. First of all, we've got to figure out a way to bring about a reduction of the scope of the task. And as the congregation has increased, a reasonable number of men need to be appointed to the eldership to increase the number to take care of it if we're going to do the work of shepherding or some reasonable facsimile of it. Now, secondly, in order to accomplish this task and in order to help the elders facilitate their work, there must be also a recognition of the special talents that each elder possesses. Turn to Romans, the 12th chapter. There's a principle here that I want us to see. I almost find my... In fact, I did not mention this at the first hour because I question really what I'm reading here. If you'll look in verse 3, at the first word in verse 3, you're going to find it's for, or because. And then if you look at verse 4, it's the first word in verse 4 is the word for, or because. Well, both of these words throw you up into what comes before each of them. Here's really what it's saying. Verse 1 says, I appeal to you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that you may prove what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. For, now that means that I'm going to say something next that comes as a result of what I've already said. Because by the grace given to me, I bid everyone among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith which God has assigned him. Because, here again is another because, each one of these resting on the one before, each one of them calling for a conclusion that follows, he says, I'm begging you, first of all, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice to God, so that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Because by the grace of God given me, he said, let me tell you that none of you ought to think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but according to the measure of faith God has granted. Because in one body we have many members, and all the members do not have the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in our serving. He who teaches, in his teaching. He who exhorts, in his exhortation. He who contributes, in liberality. He who gives aid, with zeal. He who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. Now, do you see the principle here? We're not going to go into detail on the substance of these seven things. There are seven kinds or seven gifts that he mentions here. There in verse 6, the latter part, is prophecy. In verse 7 and 8, service, teaching, exhortation, contributing, giving aid, and acts of mercy. Now, there are seven different gifts, but the point that I want you to see in connection with the lesson this morning is that the fact of the matter is that nobody has all of these. He says no member of the church has all of them. He says each one of you has a gift. Use it. But he says if you act in such a way as to imply that you have all the gifts, you're thinking more highly of yourself than you ought to think. And yet, I'm afraid that from the pulpits, we've implied that every Christian is supposed to do everything with equal ability and with equal responsibility. Maybe not with equal ability, but certainly with equal responsibility. That just simply is not scriptural. He says here, I'm begging you not to think more highly of yourself than you ought to think. Here's how to keep from it. He says, realize that you have a gift and you ought to perform it. You ought to use it. Now, the point that I'm making is this. If you see that that's true, that each of us has a gift, each of us has a talent, sanctified for use in the kingdom of God. If that be true, and if you see that, watch the implications then when it comes to the eldership. Since our elders are appointed out of a congregation that he describes here as being though that congregation where each member has a certain function and no one member has all the functions, since our elders are to be appointed from those congregations like that, does it not follow then that each elder also has a specialized gift that he is specifically qualified to minister? Why, it does. It just simply means that the congregation is a corporate body. No one member does everything. No one member has all the talents. The same thing is going to be true of any functioning eldership. They must realize certain ones of them have certain talents that others don't have. Certain have certain gifts that others just don't possess. And those elders ought to be allowed to exercise those gifts that are specifically his. Now, every elder must possess the qualifications in 1 Timothy 3 and in Titus 1 to a positive degree. We're not saying that those qualities can be possessed or not possessed at will. they must be possessed, all of them, in each elder, to a positive degree. But those elders that possess the qualities in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 still possess one of the gifts in Romans the 12th chapter for the good of the entire eldership, as they then minister to the entire membership to bring out of each member those peculiar gifts that each member possesses. But listen, we need not expect out of a congregation where Paul says, don't you think that you have every gift? No, sir, that's thinking too highly of yourself. Remember that each one of you has a gift and you exercise that gift. It is unreasonable to think that out of a congregation where that has been the instruction, we would gain men who all of a sudden, just simply by the very fact of our appointing them, would be men who had all the gifts and could do everything. Now, am I clear? You understand what I'm saying? All right. Now, let me make a practical application of this. As these men have had the... First of all, let me just make some application here. If we find that we have any significant number added to the elders, and whatever they decide on that, here's what the work will resemble. As far as specializing and getting the best out of each elder, elder number one goes into his reduced flock of, say, however many families. He works among them. As he works among them, he finds a family there that's having financial problems. They don't know how to do a budget. Well, that's not really his long suit either. Ah, but he says, I know one of our elders who, he's just excellent in that. I'm going to direct you over here to go see Lot Tucker. He's good at helping people work out their budgets. So the elder, really, who doesn't have all that much going for him as far as his finances either, you know, he's not all that exact. Why should he counsel that fellow about his budget? His doesn't look all that good itself, but he knows that Lot's does. So he says, now, Brother Tucker, Lot Tucker will help you with that. Another elder goes into his flock, and he finds there that the person is having marital problems. And it's a certain kind of marital problems that relate to another elder's problems that he's worked through and has come out victorious. So he says, I know one of our elders who has gone through that very thing just recently. Let me send you to him. Oh, watch what you're doing then. You're getting it where every elder is able to function with a specific gift, and every other elder doesn't necessarily feel threatened or imposed upon to do everything that all the elders together can do. Look again. Let's just name some of these. It may be financial. It may be marital. It may be management. It may be that somebody needs a gentle hand of mercy. There are some elders who deal with old people beautifully. Well, that's their knack. That's their gift. He who does acts of mercy, he says, let him do it with cheerfulness. There are others of us, when we're called upon maybe to wash somebody's dirty clothes and all, it's just more than we can do. Well, maybe there's a man there or a woman, probably his wife. Probably his wife. You know, these women, bless their hearts, they end up doing an awful lot of what us men are supposed to be doing anyway. But you have this, you have the referrals that are going on, where one elder refers to another, this elder refers to this elder, so that each elder is allowed to function by that gift or within that gift that is his peculiar quality. Let me give you an illustration of it. On Thursday mornings, Dr. Farrow has been meeting with us now for about 4 or 5 months in a prayer breakfast. I am astounded and astonished at that man's ability to teach. He does a fantastic job. Just this last Thursday, he took a passage out of John, the 20th chapter, and I have never had such a revelation of truth sitting at anyone's feet before. It just stunned me. He has a gift of teaching. Let me tell you what Henry's gift isn't. It's not administration. He can't chair a meeting. If his life depended on it, he couldn't chair a meeting. He couldn't chair a chair. I've told him that. He knows it. On the other hand, we've got a chairman par excellence in Dr. Benson. If you want to get something administered, if you want to get it really expedited, give it to George Benson. He can chair anything and get it on the road and get it moving. Now, I use these two men as examples because their talent is so outstanding. All right. What I'm saying simply is this. If we're going to get the best, and as Dr. Benson expressed something to me the other day, He said things that are perhaps that are perhaps democratic are not always efficient. He said there are some things that we just need to do to increase our efficiency, and that's true. What I'm saying is that once you have reduced the workload, added whatever other men into this work that need to be added in order to reduce the workload and bring it down to where the elders can get a handle on it, and then once you have also respected and understood that each elder has a peculiar gift that belongs to him, and are you willing then to channel people to him for the solution of their problems in that area, watch what happens. Number one, this perspective will give a degree of freedom to each elder, freedom from the total burden that has been imposed upon them by unthinking people who say, yes, each elder is supposed to be able to do all the things equally well, and there we go. And so they feel this tremendous burden. That just isn't true. It'll give a degree of freedom from the total burden, and it will also produce an efficiency among our elders to where we will be operating at optimum efficiency for the amount of men that we have and the amount of time that's expended and the amount of energy that's expended. All right, you add that to this significant reduction in the number of people over whom each elder is specifically responsible. Then when you do these two things, reduce the workload or the work scope, and also recognize the specific gifts of each elder, you do those two things, and you're going to produce the result of placing the work within the capabilities of each elder to perform. Now, I hope I've made this clear. I'm not very good at this drawing on here, so I did it out in advance. But if we'll do these two things, number one, reduce that workload. Number two, realize that each one has a special gift, and let him function within that framework. Tonight, we're going to look at one more that's so absolutely essential to the propagation and to the continuing ongoing of the development of leadership in the church, not just among the elders, but among all of us who are leaders. We'll look at that tonight. But these two things, I think, are certainly important as we consider the work of elders and how we can put into effect God's plan for the church. Now, this morning, we're going to conclude with the extending of an invitation. There may be some people here who've never obeyed the gospel. We're talking about the body of people into which we're asking that you come. We want to be a caring people. We want to extend the shepherd's heart of Jesus to you. And we extend that invitation to you today. If you believe in him, if you'll turn your back upon selfishness and sin, come and accept your responsibilities, be immersed into Christ, be raised to walk a new life, walking with him, he'll bless you. That's all there is to it. And he'll bring you into a caring flock of people. We want to be that people for you. That's why we're spending time on this. We want the care of Christ to be genuine through us. If you're here and you've failed, and it's been publicly, and you're a Christian and you're ashamed of what you've done, and you want to make it right publicly, this invitation is also extended to you. May God bless us. Will you come while we stand and sing?